Are you a mother who has experienced the unimaginable loss of a daughter to domestic violence? Or perhaps you know someone who has faced this heartbreaking tragedy? Well, we have an event that is tailor-made for you. Join us on September 9th in Los Angeles for the Mother's Brunch, a special event co-organized by Misogynoir Murders in partnership with the Mikeyana Johnson Foundation for Abused Women and the Nan Washington Global Wellness Foundation. This event is dedicated to honoring the mothers who have lost their daughters to domestic violence. Picture a supportive environment where mothers can come together, share their stories, and find solace among others who have experienced a similar pain. You'll have the opportunity to connect with other mothers who truly understand your journey. The Mother's Brunch is not just about healing. It's also about celebration. Indulge in a delicious brunch spread, savor the flavors, and enjoy the company of fellow mothers who have walked the same path. The event will feature live music and heartfelt remarks from inspiring keynote speakers. We invite all mothers who have been touched by domestic violence to attend this empowering event. And if you're someone who wants to support this cause, we welcome your contribution as a donor. Together, we can make a difference. To reserve your spot at the Mother's Brunch on September 9th, please register on Eventbrite. The link is in the show notes. Let's honor the memory of beloved daughters and find strength in each other. The Mother's Brunch, where healing and celebration meet. Hey y'all, I had to throw a bonus episode into your feed because there are so many updates that needed to be shared, and I just couldn't wait until the regularly scheduled episode to do so. So, stay a while, and I'll catch you up on the cases of Destiny Smothers, Akia Eggleston, and the three little sisters from Texas, Zyariel Robinson Oliver, Amaya Hughes, and Tamari Robinson Oliver. On July 26th, the Queens District Attorney, Melinda Katz, announced that Kareem Flake pleaded guilty to first-degree manslaughter for the killing of his girlfriend, 26-year-old Destiny Smothers, on the night of her 26th birthday back in November 2020. Flake was originally charged with second-degree murder, as he should have been, kidnapping, weapon possession, and tampering with evidence, and somehow ended up making a deal with the prosecutor for the manslaughter charge in exchange for only they and God knows what. He will be sentenced to 22 years in prison on September 28th, 2023. Now, I wish I could say this is a satisfying result fully, but it really isn't. I don't know exactly why or how this deal was even on the table, but I have a couple of guesses. The first is simple, and maybe the DA just didn't have enough evidence to win at trial, and we all know how much those DAs love to win. Most won't even take a case unless it's a slam dunk. However, that doesn't quite jive for me personally. If there wasn't enough evidence, why was he wanted in connection with Destiny's death? Why all of those charges? Why all of the things? It just seems weird to me if they didn't have enough evidence. For the second theory, and this is the one I'm leaning towards, you'll need to remember back to the very first episode about this case. Do you recall when I mentioned that there were two drug raids that resulted in Flake being brought in for questioning? Well, I'm wondering if this deal has more to do with that case or some other criminal case unrelated to what happened to Destiny. It would make sense, right? Maybe the prosecutor had a ton of evidence against Flake and used it as a way to pressure him to roll over on someone else in exchange for the manslaughter deal. I mean, as of now, I don't see that there have been any public mention as to why this deal was even on the table. He had to have given up something, right? There have been whispers about him possibly being a snitch of some kind, so it wouldn't be surprising to me if this deal was offered because he gave evidence of something related to another case. But of course, I don't know, and I guess it will remain speculation until that information becomes public, if it ever does. In the meanwhile, I just hope this is an outcome that will bring some semblance of peace to Destiny's family and that it's adequate justice for Destiny herself. The next update I have for you is some solid good news about Akia Eggleston's case. At the end of that episode, I said that I didn't know when the trial was set to begin because I hadn't come across any news articles regarding the date. Well, turns out the trial actually began the week I published that episode and lasted for 3 weeks. And it had a positive verdict. Apparently, Baltimore knows how to deliver righteous justice because Michael Robertson was found guilty of 2 first-degree murder charges in the killings of Akia and their unborn son, Anubis. The case was prosecuted by Assistant State's Attorney Kurt Bjorklund and was largely circumstantial, relying heavily on witness statements, about 25, and evidence like text messages, phone records, and other things of the sort. Defense Attorney Jason Rodriguez tried to diminish the state's case by offering up 2 other people as potential suspects and blaming police for not properly investigating. And he's kind of got them dead in the water there because, as we all know, they were not eager to search for Akia despite her being pregnant with a high-risk pregnancy. Anyway, one person the defense offered up as a suspect was actually the friend who found Akia's debit card outside her home during a vigil. And apparently, there was another debit card in the possession of someone else who even tried to use it. Both of those witnesses were called to the stand, and whatever evidence they presented didn't move the jury beyond reasonable doubt that Robertson wasn't guilty of sin. And it's hard not to see why they chose to convict him. The state presented evidence from Robertson's police interviews, using his own words against him. In the state's opening statement, Robertson was quoted as telling police that he and Akia argued and he, quote-unquote, chose hell. I guess the hell he chose is the hell he'll be living in for the rest of his life because he faces 2 life sentences for those murders. The sentencing hearing is scheduled for October 25th, 2023. And I truly hope that Akia's family can finally breathe a sigh of relief knowing that justice was fully served, even though Akia's body nor that of her unborn son have ever been recovered. The final update I have for you is regarding the homicide investigation for the murders of Zairiel, Amaya, and Tamari, who were murdered in July 2022, almost to the day actually, in Atlanta, Texas. Unfortunately, their killer or killers remain unknown officially, but KSLA News 12 reported that they were able to interview the neighbors whose property the girls were found on. And what they revealed certainly seems like a game changer. Josephine Webster said that she told police on July 29th, 2022, she was driving home at about 9:30 p.m. when she was approached by the man who lived with Chamonique and her children. This man asked Josephine if he could use her phone to call the children's mother because he couldn't find some of the kids. Naturally, she obliged and gave the man her house phone that he used to make the life-changing call to Chamonique while she worked. He told her that, quote, the girls hadn't showed up, end quote. The thing about the encounter that stuck out in Josephine's mind was that this man was soaked. She told the police, quote, "He was wet and I noticed that. It looked like all the way down, not sweat. It looked like water," end quote. She and Abernee Webster Jr. thought the whole encounter was strange, and when they came to learn what happened on their property, it all made sense. One more thing Josephine mentioned in the interview was that in order to reach that particular area of the property, the girls would have needed a horse. Now, I don't know if there were any horses available or owned by Chamonix, and I also don't know if it was possible to reach that area without a horse, if maybe guided by an adult. However, one thing I do know is that one of Chamonix's other children said that she saw their cousin Paris, who lived with them, go into the woods with her three sisters. Now, the Cass County Sheriff, Larry Rowe, says that while the three murders are being investigated, he couldn't share any details that confirmed or denied those statements. I truly hope law enforcement is investigating to the fullest, because we know they were already 8 months behind the ball when they announced the girls hadn't drowned after all, but instead had been mercilessly strangled to death. With huge mistakes and negligence like that, I have very little trust in whoever is investigating. But all we can do is hope and pray for the best. All right, folks, that's all I have for now, but let me know in the Q&A part of this episode what you think about these updates. I'm curious to know your thoughts. In the meantime, I'll catch you next time on Massage Noir Murders.